Please be seated. Well, what is today? Groundhog Day. Super Bowl Sunday. In secular life, of course, it's those two things that we hear most about. But today is something else for Christians, something that is far older than Punxsutawney Phil or the game of football. Today we Christians celebrate the Feast of the Presentation, or the presentation of our Lord in the temple. The celebration is also called by some other names in other circles. It's referred to as the Feast of Purification of the Virgin. The Orthodox call today's feast Hypopante, which means the meeting, or really the big meeting, referring to the meeting of Jesus, his parents, and the prophets Simeon and Hannah. The Anglican tradition refers to this day as, anybody know? Candlemas. Candlemas, because historically it is the day that all the beeswax candles to be used by church in the next year were ritually blessed. So today is a lot of things, all of the above. In Jewish tradition, 40 days after a firstborn child was born, it was to be presented at the table, at the temple, or to the local rabbi if the temple was too far. Because the firstborn male was holy unto the Lord, he belonged to God and to the temple, to be set aside by a priest. But parents could sacrifice a firstborn lamb, or if they were poor, as today's text tells us, a pair of turtle doves or pigeons, in order to sort of buy the boy back from the Lord and raise him among the people. This ritual was called the presentation. As part of the presentation, the mother also had to present herself to be examined and proclaimed ritually clean. For 40 days after the birth of a firstborn, a mother had to undergo ritual washings and prayers daily. She was ceremonially unclean until proclaimed clean by a priest or rabbi, and this second ritual was known as the purification. In the case of the presentation of Jesus and the purification of Mary, we are told of an encounter that Mary and Joseph have with two prophets in the temple, a man Simeon and a woman Hannah. These two elderly prophets had spent large portions of their lives in the temple praying and waiting for the coming of Messiah. The meeting is depicted in some detail in our gospel reading. Simeon's reaction to Jesus becomes the known text of what we call the Song of Simeon, the Nunc Dimittis, or the dismissal. It is a benediction of sorts that leads to the tradition of Candlemas. Centuries ago, it was typically late winter by the time all the honey from the previous fall had been processed, and all the beeswax from all the hives had been rendered into candles for the coming year. The coincidence of mass amounts of candles showing up at churches and of the text of Simeon's song, which refers to Messiah as the light to enlighten the Gentiles and the glory of his people Israel, led quickly to a feast of presentation of Jesus doubling as a yearly service dedicated to blessing all the beeswax candles as well. And finally to a ritual in which the lighted candles would be processed out of the church into the darkness to symbolize the light of Christ entering the darkness of the world from the church. If you read about Candlemas online, you may be surprised most references claim that the tradition of Candlemas did not begin until the 5th or 6th century, even though clearly we have evidence of celebrations happening 200 or 300 years before that, and many of the early church fathers, who I will not list for you, but most of them who died in the 4th century, have given us sermons about both Candlemas and the presentation at the same time. So enough with the history lesson. Just because, did somebody say okay? Just because the presentation was a big deal in early churches, does it mean that it still seems like a big deal or that it needs to be a big deal today? Why should we care? Well, that's a good question. One of the reasons stories from the early life of Jesus persisted in the Gospels, and not just stories of his teaching or miracle working, is that it's of utmost importance for us to take every opportunity to remind ourselves that Jesus was a real person who had a real birth, a real childhood, real parents. He scraped his real knees. He worked hard for a living, and he ate and drank with real people. This is important because it's easy for us today, just like it was for people in the early church, to over-spiritualize Jesus, to emphasize only the fact that he was the Christ, only the fact that he was God. But being God did not separate Jesus from the flesh. He was God incarnate, in meat. We cannot make that clear enough. Being God incarnate did not just mean that he was mainly God, and oh yes, by the way, he appeared in the flesh. No. God did not just put on flesh like a costume or a bodysuit, although sometimes we use that kind of language from time to time. God actually became flesh. He didn't just put it on. He became flesh. God became one of us, so that we could be one with God. It's kind of hard to swallow. But logically, you might say, according to the rules, incarnation is the only way that physical beings from the physical universe that we know and understand could be reunited with God. When God reconciles all things to himself, as the scriptures say, he does it by actually taking into himself the physical stuff that he created, so that it can be holy once again, so that a real human being would be undoing all the damage that real human beings had done since the creation. It's the only way to make it work in a court of law. Some of you, I know, have had exchange students from other countries living in your homes for a time. Maybe some of you have been foreign exchange students as well. I've never been a foreign exchange student, although I've visited other countries. But it seems to me that we could say Jesus is a kind of extended stay foreign exchange student. He's born so that God can actually live in a foreign place, depend on the same food and water that we do, the same family relationships, speak the same language, consider the same sights and smells and feelings, to be home, to actually be at home among the race that he wants to communicate with and to save. In this way, we would once again be God's own, and we could consider God to be our own once again as well. Jesus once again establishes a two-way street of exchange and understanding between God's people and God's self. Maybe the idea of an ambassador gives us a better picture of what Jesus is and does. Jesus translates God for us, in a way, and he translates humanity for God as well. He's a go-between that enjoys full citizenship in both humanity and in the Trinity. He lives in our country, but he sets up shop here on behalf of God. And the church, you might say, is his embassy. The church offers physical places on earth where God's country is represented, and our homes can be this too. When you enter a church building, you have entered the territory of God, so to speak. Of course, God is everywhere, but because we are human, it's still good for us to have a sense of thresholds and ownership, to knock on God's door, if you will, to enter God's house, to interact with our family, which is also God's family, to eat at God's table, to be reminded that we too are ambassadors sent out to do God's work. So, exchange student, ambassador, one other way we might think about Jesus on a day like this is priest. Our reading from the letter to the Hebrews today reminds us that Jesus Christ sharing our flesh and blood, sharing our very life, goes beyond the ideas of just exchange student or ambassador. Jesus becomes our priest. by participating in our reality, he becomes one with the supernatural power to actually do something about our human predicament. He doesn't just tell us about it. He doesn't merely take orders from elsewhere. He is the embodiment of those orders, and he makes it happen. We humans, through our foolishness and because of deception, have always made choices that separate us from God. That makes us less than we are intended to be. We foolishly agreed to be enslaved by something that looked good, and we've been slaves ever since. Jesus, as our priest, as one of us, is able to become our ransom, to set us free from the bondage that we were placed in by our kidnapper, the one who holds the threat of death over our heads, as we heard from the epistle this morning. Jesus conquers death, and in conquering death, he shows the devil to be the liar that he is. This little boy child presented at the temple by his mother and father when he was 40 days old becomes our priest. And not only our priest, but our sacrifice, our altar, and the new temple in which our offering is made. In one small human life, God undoes what human beings had done wrong from the beginning of time. God makes the sacrifice that reunites us to himself by releasing us from bondage, releasing us from the hells that we have made for ourselves by foolishly agreeing to the captivity of self-deception. We may not think that the presentation of Jesus in the temple has anything to do with us, but really, it has everything to do with us. It's a great irony of salvation history that Mary and Joseph's small sacrifice of two turtle doves to keep Jesus in their own home and raise him instead of committing him to a life of service in the temple, that small sacrifice is actually what freed Jesus to grow into the one who would be the ultimate priest on behalf of all humankind. Simeon sings, "Lord, now lettest thou thy servant depart in peace, according to your word. For mine eyes have seen your salvation, which you have prepared before the face of all people, a light to lighten Gentiles and the glory of your people Israel." Jesus said, "I am the light of the world." Jesus also said, "You are the light of the world." God's beeswax is our beeswax. We are the candles, the lights that take the truth and mercy of Christ's priesthood into the darkness that surrounds us. And he is the candle that dispels the darkness that wants to fill us. When at the end of our service we ask God, "Send us out to do the work you have given us to do," let us remember that we walk as servants, as exchange students, as ambassadors, and as fellow priests. We are the light of the world. We walk as children of light.